This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Narrative Kisa is a literary journal that explores the historical and contemporary narrative experience of Malaysia and Southeast Asia, bringing together diverse voices that creatively challenge and reimagine the idea of the narrative. The bilingual journal features some of the most revered and established writers from Malaysia and the Southeast Asian region, so I'm finding out more about it today from its editors, Pauline Phan and Yana Rizal. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
So tell me a little bit about the idea behind this journal.
We actually came up with the idea to do this journal. It was in conjunction with a festival that was happening in Iskandar Puteri, which is called the Narrative Festival. And we were discussing that wouldn't it be a wonderful thing to actually come up for this event and for the longer term, a bilingual literary journal that explores what the idea of the narrative is in very imaginative ways, also challenging the idea of the narrative, responding to it, taking inspiration from it, and exploring the narrative traditions that exist in Malaysia and in Southeast Asia.
What is the role of the literary journal on somebody's bookshelves? You know, so you have books, you have fiction, nonfiction, you have things of that nature, you have compendiums. Where do literary journals kind of slot in somebody's reading experience?
I think, you know, with this particular journal, what we envision it to be is a kind of a collection of, again, you know, not just a particular idea of what a narrative is, but also to try and see where we can push the boundaries of particular genres and how we understand it at the moment. So this particular journal serves as a kind of a flavor as to what narratives have to offer, we have to offer in this particular region. So I think it's a very interesting experience as you flip from the front to back. There's not a particular thematic thing that we, you know, in the way that we arrange this journal, it's meant to give you a different feel every time you flip through the pages. So
yeah, and I think literary journals in general, they do occupy quite a different place than a book or non-fiction book or a fiction book. Or it's something, sometimes you feel like it's something still in process. Usually if you read poetry that's in a journal, sometimes it comes from a poet who's possibly not yet done an entire collection. It's a place of discovery. I really find that literary journals in general, the world over, are places of discovering both the old and the new. And so sometimes you discover things from the archives, you discover things that have been forgotten, or you discover a different aspect of a very well-known writer. Other times you discover something completely, somebody completely unheard of, a completely new voice. That is really exciting about literary journals.
And I'm going to admit that I'm struggling with saying, okay, narrative, where is the emphasis on this? Because, of course, when you say it in English, it's narrative, but that's not a natural kind of, that's not a natural emphasis in Malay. And here it's narrative kisa. I don't know if I'm getting that right. Where does the name come from?
Well, kisa, well, to be perfectly honest with you, our suggestion for the title of this journal was kisa. That was our first choice. Kisa really comes from the Malay word for tale, stories. So I think that really encapsulates the idea behind this journal because, again, you know, we wanted to look at this term of kisa and narrative and how do we kind of imagine it again. But the thing is, because this was also done in conjunction with the Iskarnival festival in Johor, therefore, you know, the word narrative, our sponsors felt was very important to be also included as part of the journal.
For the identity.
Yeah. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, it also kind of encapsulates this kind of bilingual feel as well, because narrative is a bit more of an English, you know, in terms of its origins, whereas kisa is very... very grassroots, very Nusantara.
Yeah, and the word kisa actually, I mean, it's used in the oral tradition a lot, and that's why we actually love it. It's actually Professor Mohammad Haji Saleh at the launch was saying that actually it's a Persian word in origin. Mm. We probably got it from the Arabic, but it's Persian in origin. But also kisa, when you think back in the written literary tradition in Malaysia, you would go back to things like the Kisah Pelayaran Abdullah. Mm. So, you know, the Hikayat Abdullah of going to the East Coast and those kinds of journeys and voyages of discovery.
Mm. So there's a very rich connotation attached to kisah. In fact, our epilogue, if you open the first page, it says, "Maka tersebutlah kisah." Mm. So, yeah.
And when it comes to this notion of the story, of the tale, what would you say is the power of narrative or of the story in terms of telling us a little bit more about the world in which we occupy?
Well, I think, especially in these particular regions, when we talk about narrative here, our history is actually a lot embedded in our oral traditions, which is also a form of narrative, albeit it's not a written kind of narrative. It's passed through the oral traditions. But, you know, so much of our understanding of how we are as a people are actually embedded within these stories. So these are actually the very important things. And therefore, you know, what we try to do here is also to capture some of that oral traditions and transform it in written form, but also to have a little bit of a retelling of our myths in this particular region. So you'll find in there, for example, the Kisah of Badang, which is actually written in like three different versions of that. Because, of course, when you talk about these myths, right, there will always be different versions of that particular myth. So,
yeah. The other thing about narrative traditions, of course, there's in the more modern or modernist setting or contemporary reality, the way we tell stories about ourselves, also the way I think writers have insisted on writing, usually to tell, it may not necessarily be to tell a story, but you always have a kind of voice and you do think about what that is that you want to say. So it's an instinctive thing, whether you're in the oral tradition or in the written tradition, it's what are you bringing to your audience and what are you bringing, not even if you're not thinking about the audience, what are you bringing to the piece of paper that you are, or your art?
Yeah. With all these different stories being told, and with, as you say, this rich, very varied tradition, that's what we have, is there a singular identity that you can identify in this journal, or is it also as much of a mishmash as we are?
I think the region itself is a bit of a, you know, if it's a bit of a mix, you know, I don't think it's in our position to try to dictate what that particular identity is.
Yeah, but I think certain things did emerge as we were looking, because we did call, we had an open call for submissions. We received about over 200 submissions, and from which we extracted and selected about 56. And we also invited some established writers to contribute to the journal. But there are certain things that emerge, not because we told them to, but because just sort of naturally certain things recur and emerge. And some of those things, I think there is a kind of, especially among the younger writers, they do seem to be searching for things in history, but in a very, very interesting way. It's not necessarily, and I think none of them actually are looking at linear history anymore. Yep. And really, all of them took a very creative approach and a very probing and questioning approach to history. Yeah. Some of them just searching, some of them focusing on particular events or occurrences, as others actually just looking at a kind of more of an identity that came from their ancestors.
Yeah, kind of like a struggle with cultural identity, if you will. You know, there was this particular fiction about her experience with Bomos, right? Of course, you know, when we think about Bomo, we have a certain perception of how Bomos are. But again, in this story, she gives a different light to how this particular Bomo that she encountered is a bit different to what how we normally understand as Bomos and things like that. So.
Do we need a lot of context in order to pick up on the cues and the stories that are being told, since it is a regional journal? And some things will, of course, be very intimately familiar, and other things will be, you know, glancingly familiar, while others might just be, you know, something that you've never heard of at all.
I think not necessarily. I think most of the creative work does speak for itself. And one thing, there's a few things that probably need a little bit more explanation, but those have been contextualized. Like, for example, there is an excerpt of a hikayat from Aceh that has been, there's an excerpt of a translation into English, and that needed a bit of contextualization. So the translator actually did give quite an extensive note contextualizing what this interesting hikayat was about. And interestingly, it was about the relationship between the Kingdom of Aceh Johor and Pahang at the time when they were in kind of rivalry?
I think, you know, where it needs to be contextualized, we have tried our best to kind of put a context to it as well. But you're right in saying that, you know, there are particular aspects or pieces in this journal that may be a little bit harder for us to understand. For example, the Iban poems, right? So because a lot of the names that were written there are not particularly familiar to us over in the Semenanjung. But again, you know, we try to be as inclusive as possible to try to get people to kind of think and also search, okay, what is this? What is this particular narrative about? So from there, it sets as a platform.
And one thing I think is also, I think we wanted to encourage the audience or the readers also when in reading sometimes poetry to take that same kind of the position of if you're listening to an oral tradition, you don't necessarily have to understand every single word that's being said. And in the same way, I think sometimes when you read something, sometimes, especially if it's poetry, you can just allow yourself to appreciate the tone of the language, the music of the language, without having to deconstruct every single word.
I'm speaking today with Pauline Phan and Yana Rizal, editors of Narrative Kisah, which is a literary journal that explores historical and contemporary narratives, the historical and contemporary narrative experiences of Malaysia and Southeast Asia. We find out a little bit more about the editorial process of putting the whole thing together after this. You are listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin, and in the studio with me talking today about Narrative Kisah, an upcoming literary journal actually that's come out, are its editors Pauline Phan and Yana Rizal. And we've been talking about the importance of story to our region and why that's the focus of the journal. Now, earlier you also spoke about kind of the bilingual nature of its title. Is that what the journal is as well, bilingual?
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's actually slightly more than bilingual, but primarily bilingual.
Okay. In general, I mean, earlier we talked about how there were some thematic preoccupations that emerged, not necessarily that were imposed, but that emerged. Do you also see any sort of major movements or practices that we have in common across the region in terms of our literary traditions?
Well, certainly, because of course, if you go back, the borders actually of our region were not as fixed and as established as they are today. And so many of the oral traditions that we have, as well as the literary traditions, did actually go back and forth a lot between what we now see as nations. Indonesia and Malaysia, for example, if you look at the written tradition, of course, in Indonesia, of course, they started using Bahasa Melayu as the national language. And there was a very strong movement called the Pujangga Baru in the early 20th century, who people like Ameh Hamzah, who did really they were an important defining force, I think, in modern Indonesian literature, and also inspired very much the writing in Malay here in the peninsula. So there have been many, many forms and forces that have overlapped over time. But even in the oral tradition, it's been, of course, very strong. You have places like Kelantan Patani, who are now in two different countries, but really the traditions are completely the same. But there are, even in the more contemporary writers, I think there are things that there are similar preoccupations expressed differently, perhaps. But you do see, so we invited a few guest writers from the region, including Gunawan Muhammad, the Indonesian essayist and poet, Avianti Armand, the Indonesian poet, Kaluma Arkangel Dawana, who is a young Filipino poet, and who has Dr. Lychee Cairn from Singapore.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think, you know, when we speak about these things, back in those days, perhaps the influence and the way that this region, you know, the cultures within this region kind of inform each other is perhaps stronger back in the day as compared to now, because the advent of, you know, we are a bit more globalized these days. I would venture to say that most of our influence also come more perhaps from the West than it is, you know, within our own region. So that is also something that we want to kind of address in our other initiative, Kata Kata, but, you know, that is outside of this particular journal that we're doing.
What was the process for collating the works for the collection? I mean, how did you start? So you put the call out and 200 came in, and then what? How did you bring that number down?
Right. Well, we put out a call both in English and in Malay. We did also actively seek out submissions in the Chinese and the Tamil. Unfortunately, not that many came back in those languages. But we hope that in the future more writers will be encouraged to send in works from other languages as well. We got quite, we got many submissions from both English and Malay. I think the first thing that we did was really just look at everything. We pulled out the ones that we thought really spoke to us the most. Mm. Both Yana and I looked at things separately, and so we didn't influence each other's decision, I think.
Yeah. I think, you know, the key thing is also whether the themes actually kind of, fed what, it fit to what we were looking for this particular journal, Narrative Kisah. And also, secondly, I think, you know, it's just a simple matter of whether, you know, what sort of quality are we looking for. I keep saying this as well, even in the launch that we just had over the weekend. The way that we went about this was never in the idea of tokenism. We never took one particular piece just because we felt, we needed to include this just because it represents a particular identity or a particular community. Of course, that would be ideal, but what we were presently surprised to find was that, the narratives that came from these communities who may not necessarily be widely represented here are actually very strong.
Very.
So
East Malaysian contributions were very strong. And I think they really stand out. They stood out among the submissions. Some of the others, I think everything was interesting for sure. And I think people were grappling with the idea of narrative. And it was really encouraging to see how many submissions came in. Mm. But in the end, again, we also wanted to give a lot of space to new voices. Mm. So because we do have quite a few very established and well-known names, we thought it was important also to give space to new voices, some of whom were really very impressive.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of them actually sent in pieces that were not just, you know, written, but also visually, it's visual narratives,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, they're visual narratives as well.
So, you know, we have this particular one that I like, Costumes. Mm. So that one is by Chrisleen Sal. So what she did was that she actually had a few photographs, and for each photo, she also attached a poem that kind of expresses what that photo is about. That one is about the Lun Bawang community from East Malaysia. So I thought that was very... when you read it, you do feel a bit enlightened about what their circumstances are over there.
When you say that there were pieces that were... You read it with the lens of, this is not quite what I'm looking for this journal, or this is what I'm looking for. What was that lens? I mean, even though it was... It's quite an open concept in that sense. But obviously, in order to get rid of 3/4 of the submissions and narrow it down to what you want, you must have had some sort of inkling of, no, this is really what I'm looking for. What was that thing?
Well, I think one of the things we were looking for is something that was pushing boundaries in some way. So of genre as well as, or just even of language. For example, poetry, there can be beautiful poetry, and absolutely it would maybe fit somewhere else, but if it doesn't really address or it doesn't somehow help you to reimagine anything, I think then for us it probably wouldn't fit into the journal. We did actually want people to sort of challenge themselves and not also take the word narrative or the idea of narrative as a given. Mm. We did, we hoped that people would really rethink and deconstruct and reimagine what that was, and possibly even reject it and say, we don't need narrative traditions, or we don't write a narrative, and which is great as well. And some people did, and some people actually sent in very experimental work, which is nice.
For example, there was this fictocritical piece that was actually a literary essay, but also infused a lot of fiction in that as well, fictional elements within that essay. But it kind of retells the story of Malay proverbs, for example, even, you know, the mythical figures like Bujang Senang, not a person, a crocodile, but, you know, one of those things, and, you know, Bagai Pungguk Rindukan Bulan. Mm-hmm. So these kind of things are what we are looking for, a deep connection to culture, deep connection to history, perhaps.
And recasting those things in ways that we haven't thought about before. Mm-hmm. I think that's what stood out for many of the submissions that we did select was something new, that it made us look at things in a different way.
Is it unfair to ask you what some of your favorite pieces were?
No, I don't think it's unfair at all. There are. I really love the piece that opens, the two poems that open the journal, which are by Kule Grassi from Sarawak. And he is a poet. He's also a musician. And we've actually worked with him in the past as a musician. But this was the first time I'd actually read his poetry. And it was very... It struck me because it really does have a very obvious connection with the oral tradition. And I think the way he writes poetry is almost like the invocations that you would hear in an oral tradition.
Mm. There was also this one beautiful piece by a writer that we have not heard of before, called Z.H. Liu.
Yes.
So he wrote a piece called Distance. Mm. And that piece is interesting because it delved into the lives of the Chinese diaspora in Malaysia. Of course, that is also, I think he's specializing in that field as well. He's currently doing, I think, his postgraduate. I'm not sure whether it's master's or PhD in this particular field. So that was also, again, very beautifully written.
Very evocative. And also, it also challenged the genres. It was prose written like poetry.
Yeah, lyrical
very,
prose, I would,
very
I would
lyrical,
say.
What are some of the nuances of the writer-editor relationship as you've experienced it, you know, in terms of the work that you do and in terms of this journal? I mean, are there obligations that exist on either side of that relationship, and how do they kind of meet in the middle?
Mm. Obligation-wise, for me as an editor, I always look at a piece. I mean, for one, you should have a healthy respect for the author itself. You know, certain authors do take a very conscious decision to include or exclude, or even, you know, in terms of stylizing their piece as well. So that has to be respected, of course. But on our side, I think there's two ends to that obligation: your obligation to the original author, but also the obligation of presenting it in a way that is also, how should I say it, accessible, and also, you know, just in terms of grammar and just making sure that everything is kind of in place.
Yes. Yeah. I think the writer's obligation to the editor should be, please check all your grammar before you submit.
That makes our life a whole lot easier, that's right.
Yes, no typos and grammar, please. I mean, typos are a little bit more excusable.
Earlier you spoke about a desire to avoid tokenism wherever possible, and the disparity between men and women in terms of publication, in terms of representation, both literary, in film, you know, just basically everywhere, is one that we're increasingly talking about. Was this a factor at all when you were putting the journal together, this notion of having parity?
Actually, we had many submissions from women.
Yeah.
We had many. We didn't have to go out seeking specifically submissions from women.
Exactly. And those, some of the strong ones, really strong women. I mean, like, of course, when we talk about having inclusion and all that, that was always at the back of my mind. But, you know, again, we did not have to make any compromises on that front at all. Because we realized, you know, as you flip through the journal as well, you'll see just kind of, all right, so it's, you know, really gender balanced. Of course, we wish to have more representation from, you know, other communities in Malaysia. But I think, you know, we did try to actively seek out wherever
possible.
Hopefully
that will come in the future.
Yeah, you know, as more people know about this, we hope to get more and more submissions, hopefully for the next issue as well.
But was this something that you had lingering in the back of your head, that, oh no, what if we don't get enough variety of, not just, you know, men and women, but variety of voices in a very pluralistic society?
Yes.
Was that something you had present when you put the call out?
It was, actually, which is why we put the call out in two languages. And we did also make sure that those calls went to the right places in which they would really reach people who are writers, who are artists, and interested, and who are really active communities.
Yeah. In fact, in the call for submissions as well, we did specifically mention that we were looking for Chinese, basically Mandarin, and also Tamil submissions, and other languages as well that exist in Malaysia. So, yeah.
So hopefully this trend of not needing to worry about that inclusion will continue.
Yeah.
It's beautifully designed, I have to say. The first thing that I noticed was how striking the cover is. Who designed it? How did the aesthetics of it come together?
The designers were Studio Sputnik.
It's a great name.
These two very wonderful designers. They worked very closely with us. Yeah. And it was also a design that evolved. We've had many, many discussions. There were many drafts
and
versions of the journal. The color was red was the color from the beginning, but with the way we were going to use it was not exactly. Yeah,
it was
fixed.
Also the color for the Is Carnival narrative. Yeah. So the theme color for that, which we again transposed for this purpose.
Yes.
But I think, you know, in terms of the coming up with the design concept, it was also a collaboration, very much a discussion between us and also the designers as well. You know, we wanted to have something that was a little bit more of an abstraction of this
of topography.
Yeah, of topography. Mm. That's what it is really.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I mean, when you were putting this together, were you thinking about how this would continue through to future editions, to future installments of, you know, of the journal?
Yes, well, we hope that it will continue to be an annual journal. We are thinking of possibly opening up the call a little bit wider and possibly opening it up even to the region, because I think the region has a lot to offer as well. And again, many things are overlapping in our region. Like Aceh is actually so close to the Malay Peninsula experience, and so is Indonesia, so is Thailand. I mean, many Philippines as well. Yeah. Many of these Singapore, needless to say, many of these places we do experience as a region, whether it's a subliminal region. I think it's probably more subliminal than it is actual.
Yeah, I think the potential is really wide.
But it is, yeah.
It's just a matter of, you know, the kind of challenges that we need to overcome in terms of, you know, translating these things as
yeah.
well.
But again, you know, literary translation is actually a very important aspect of this journal as well. There's quite a lot of literary translation, and we made it a point to include that, because I think that's one of the, again, that's one of the ways of opening up a language, and it opens you up in terms of ideas as well as in terms of the language itself.
Yeah.
And do you see when we spoke earlier about that very particular lens, you know, that idea of being able to reimagine someone's story or to be able to I suppose, slide into a narrative. Do you see that being the theme of future editions as well? Because narrative as a word, kisah as a word, you know, it can really go in any
all
number
diamond.
Of directions.
Yes.
Do you see it spreading out like that as well? Or?
I think possibly for future editions, we may be more specific in an actual theme. Mm. And because I think the underlying narrative theme will probably be there anyway.
Mm.
But within that, I think there's many other themes that you can explore.
Explore, yeah.
What aspects of editing and publishing this did you least and most enjoy?
I can't say that I actually least enjoy anything. I honestly enjoyed the entire process.
I enjoyed the proofreading.
Well, yeah, proofing takes a lot of work and a lot of focus, of course.
Very meticulous.
It's a very meticulous process.
But it's so necessary. Yeah. I mean, I think every time you think you're done with proofreading, you'll find something
that will always
that
something.
Has escaped your attention.
Yeah, yeah.
Anybody who has ever done any proofreading, yeah. I think, will know this. Yeah.
Yeah. Jana and I got very little sleep.
Yeah, especially for, you know, a couple of weeks leading up to the printing. So
yes.
that was really, you know.
Also, the printers did a fantastic job. I have to really applaud them as well. It was APW, Art Printing Works in Bangsar. They
fantastic.
Did an incredible job. And they are very experienced. They've actually been doing this for a long time, this kind of printing literature. Mm. I think they used to print books by Usman Awang and Latif Muhyiddin. You know, they used to work with DBP.
Mm.
So it was wonderful to work with them as well.
So really, I mean, this journal is a collaboration of so many people.
It is, you know, it is. And our editorial advisors as well. Edin Koo was an editorial advisor. Nani Kaha was an editorial advisor.
Yep.
I mean, everyone gave really good input.
Mm. And it's beautifully done. I mean, it really is.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's something I would look forward to reading.
Good. I'm so glad.
Do you think that, are you hoping that this will kickstart or will encourage, maybe not kickstart, but encourage or invigorate discourse and conversations around just the Malaysian narrative, I suppose.
For sure. I think that's one of the things that we really hope to achieve with this as well.
Yeah.
Not just to give a platform for new and emerging writers, but also to have that discourse build around, you know, our narrative experience.
Absolutely. And actually, we are planning to organize some conversations around this journal and possibly a KL launch. We've just launched it in Johor. We'll possibly do a KL launch in a few weeks' time.
Yeah. And we'll get some of our writers from there as well. And Professor Muhammad Haji Saleh, which we all know as our literary laureate in Malaysia. So he's kindly graced our launch in Johor just 2 days ago.
Yes.
But, you know, we are hoping to also, again, you know, give him the platform to speak. And he had really some very wonderful insights on writing and in translation. He said this. He was like, translation is a dangerous art. And I couldn't agree more. And, you know, the way that translation really opens up your ideas and all that. And, you know, aside from actually just featuring our Nusantara kind of narratives here, we also included things like Max Dautendey, which you, Pauline, translated from the German.
That's an interesting story because it was written, Max Dautendey was a writer from the late 19th, early 20th century, German. He traveled to Southeast Asia and he wrote a story based in Penang. And it's interesting to look at because, one, he was a very, he was quite a highly acclaimed impressionist writer. Not that well known anymore, though. Hardly even read in the German anymore. But he wrote so many stories about Asia and Southeast Asia. And it's interesting to see how he imagines Southeast Asia. Of course, he gets the names all wrong. That to me just adds to the charm. Yeah. But he has this very impressionist, almost like painting way of describing Penang. Yep.
Can I just say that if you made a T-shirt that said "Translation is a dangerous art," I would wear that. I think that would sell. You should consider
that phrase. Really,
It's very evocative. Okay, so in the meantime, before this launches here, how can we get our hands on a copy if people are keen?
Well, I think the best way would be to contact me and Yana.
Pusaka, really.
And Pusaka, yes.
So we are reachable. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on our website, which is also, you know, we are revamping that as well at the moment.
Yes.
But also do come for the KL Literary Festival. That's where we're going to be as well. That's happening in November
11th to 13th.
Yeah, so you can come and talk to us about the journal and possibly get your hands on a copy as well, because we are planning to also include a slot for this journal in that festival. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay, so a variety of ways in the meantime. Thank you both very much for coming in.
Thank you.
I've been speaking today with Pauline Fan and Yana Rizal, editors of Narrative Kisah, which is a literary journal exploring the narrative experience of Malaysia and Southeast Asia. You are listening today to Live and Learn. This is The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.